Om Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
To remain free from and uncovered by tendencies such as those for jnana and karma is another secondary characteristic of bhakti. In the phrase jnana karmadi, the word adi means and so forth. It refers to the practice of astanga yoga, vairagya, shankhya yoga, and the occupational duties according to one's caste or creed. It has already been explained that the favorable cultivation of activities to please Sri Krishna is called bhakti. The living entity is transcendental, Krishna is transcendental, and the tendency of unalloyed devotional service through which the living entity establishes an eternal relationship with Krishna is also transcendental. The Swarupa Lakshana, or the intrinsic nature of bhakti, acts only when a jiva is situated in his pure state. When the jiva is conditioned and situated in the material world, along with his swarup, two more marginal identities are present, the gross and the subtle body. Through the media of these, the jiva endeavors to fulfill his various desires while living in the material world. Right? So that means he has his swarup, which is servant of Krishna. Right? Because that's the principle. One is servant of Krishna. Swarup means swarup. Will mean the natural, the manifestation of one's natural form. The manifestation of one's natural tendency to serve the Lord. Okay, so that will mean in the spiritual world that is the spiritual body, because it'll be a manifestation of the nature that you have in serving Krishna. Right, in the material world, sent the nature to serve is still there, but not seeing it in relationship to Krishna, therefore a spiritual body won't manifest. Right? Because there, seeing Krishna is through dead matter. And so we manifest the gross and subtle body to be able to interact with Krishna in the form of dead matter. Does that make sense? So it's not that it's something different. This is the difficulty, is that much of the time we define that the spiritual is in principle different, right? In quality it's different, but not in principle, right? It's the same formula, right? Let's say you add 1 plus 1. It's the same thing as adding, 50 plus 50. So 50 plus 50 is more developed, more detail. Or 1,000 by 1,000, it's more detail, but the principle's still the same. It doesn't change. Right? That's the element. So that the living entity will interact with Krishna in a form appropriate for the nature, the mood of how he sees the Lord. That's an eternal principle that always goes on. So that can either be the natural form, which is the spiritual body, or the conditioned form, which is something fit for interacting with the modes of nature according to the particular modes that you happen to be governed by. Does this make sense? Right? So that's why we specifically don't get all, starry-eyed about, we start talking about our swarup and all this kind of stuff. Because his point is your mentality is spiritual, that'll manifest. If mentality is not spiritual, it won't manifest. So you can sit around here talking about it all day, but unless you're cultivating pure devotional service, it'll never manifest. So what's the use? Right? Just like if you're talking about, wow, we could cook this, we could cook that, yeah, and we could do this and that and get out your recipe books and that. But unless you sit down and cook, there's nothing to eat. Right? So the discussion is enough to understand the principle. The principle is, you, what is your mentality? That's the form you have. It's that simple. So we can discuss the spiritual body. That's fine. But know that you won't get it until you have the mentality that matches it. Right? So that's why it's not a big discussion. Right? It's discussed. It's the points made, so you know it's there. You know what the purpose is, what the development is. But it's not something that becomes, you know, an enthusiastic kind of focus. Like that. Okay. So that means that one should only have the spiritual form. But unfortunately, in the material world, one has the principle that defines the spiritual form of natural servant of Krishna, plus two other identities, the gross and the subtle. So that's why it becomes a distraction, a disturbance. Right? Therefore, when introducing somebody to the concept of Shuddha Bhakti, we have to acquaint him with the concept of anyavilashita shunya, being devoid of any desires other than the desire to please Krishna. Right? So all these other things, the jnana and karma, so as we pointed out, is what the mentality is, what defines what body you have. Right? So it's not that one is performing activity or one is using intelligence. That's not karma and jnana. Right? Sometimes when devotees discuss philosophy, oh, don't be a jnani. You know, do something practical. But all they're saying is, don't be a jnani, be a karmi. Right? Because if you do activity, if it's not for Krishna, then what's the difference? You understand? So they're saying, don't talk about philosophy, do some practical service to Krishna. But the philosophy is also connected to Krishna. Krishna's tattva. How do you interact with Krishna as tattva? Right? With the intelligence. Krishna says at the end of Gita, one who studies this Gita is worshipping him with one's intelligence. Right? So this is worshipping with intelligence, but that means it's devotional service. One is doing it to please Krishna. If one is doing it just because you want to know, then that's a jigyasu. That's a neophyte. So when you find out what you want to know, there's a chance then you'll go do something else. You know, there's a vast world out there, and one can get involved in all that. Does that make sense? Pun intended. Yes?
Perhaps she writes, the tendency of an devotional service through which the living entity establishes. It happens simultaneously. This arising of this analog tendency and...
Yes. I mean, the point is that the manifestation of form is to that degree that is the manifestation of the mentality. Right? Because the point is we'll tend to take that you know, the form may be manifest at the stage of prema. Right? So that's why there's always an argument over, you know, the neutral state of the living entity. Right? Because the living entity being marginal means they have to be between the two. But because he originates from the spiritual, right, that his natural situation is spiritual in a spiritual form, but the mentality is still neutral. Then as you take up the proper, you know, you go in the natural direction, then you engage the spiritual form and the spiritual facilities to please Krishna. So it's anyavilashita. You know, but it's pure devotion. Then one develops prema, right? From that position, one won't fall, right? But from the marginal position, which is spiritually situated in spiritual form, one can fall because it's neutral, right? Does that make sense? Because the point is being it's the nature to be spiritual, one would, from the spiritual platform, look at the material. Because if one was situated materially with a material form, then that covering, how would you see the spiritual? You understand?
This is the situation of manifestation of eternal living entity.
Yes. But the point being is that the having the spiritual form and being on the platform of prema are two different stages, right? The form is there at the stage of bhava, which means one's liberated, one's not materially contaminated. But it doesn't mean that one can't look and become interested in the material energy. That's why it says even someone on the platform of bhava can fall. But on the platform of bhava, anybody who's studied the scriptures knows that the platform of bhava is performed in the spiritual world in one's spiritual form. It's not done in the material platform. One may be situated here, but through meditation, one is within the pastimes because one has the spiritual form, so you can be in the pastimes. Does this make sense? So if one can fall from there, it's the same principle. If you fell from there before, you can fall again. When you get to prema, then one won't fall. Does that make sense? Now, typically, there's a difference between that situation of falling, the first, and then attaining that and falling again, is that generally the second time one's a little bit more careful because you know what the material world is. So basically, the only thing that can cause that generally is offense to the Vaishnavas like this. That can definitely create it. But otherwise, just getting distracted, like Jarabhara, he got distracted. That's why it didn't adjust him from his mental state of being absorbed in the Lord's pastime. So as a deer, he was still in Uttamadikari. Yes.
And he got reborn as a liberated deer. So is it a general thing that if you fall again from bhava, you kind of bounce back pretty quickly?
Or? Yeah, generally, that would be the normal thing. You know, unless it's Vaishnava aparad, then you just can't say what will happen there. You know, like I think it was one devotee went to Prabhupada and said he wanted Prabhupada's blessings because he wanted to leave Prabhupada and go join this other kind of yogi or guru or something like that. Prabhupada says, yes, I give you my blessings. For 1,000,000 lifetimes, you'll never come in contact with a bona fide guru. Because he's going to leave the bona fide guru for a bogus guru. Yeah. So yes, 1,000,000 lifetimes, no problem. You want to do that, then take 1,000,000 lifetimes, you know. Then when you're, you know, after that you're ready, then maybe you'll take it more seriously. Also unbalanced. Yes.
The devotee changes his mind or that's it, like that?
No.
Also unbalanced.
It's one of those you catch it, nice, if you don't. That's the process of creation when it describes the primary and secondary creation. That's what it's describing. Because Brahma, he's there, but he's imbued with passion. Otherwise, how does he deal, you know, with it? He's involved with it. Otherwise, you don't know what it is, you tend to not get involved. But because of being imbued with the motive passion, he is involved in the creative process. So now, at that point, if he becomes realized from that position of Brahma, one could go right back to the spiritual world. If not, from Brahma, one it generally tends to go down to the Prajapatis and the great sages, and then, you know, it just keeps going from there. Right? But generally, one who takes up devotional service means they've been through all the species. So it's a matter of been there, done that, right? You know, but we're conditioned, so the tendency is to, you know, we want to get rid of the problems, right? Because if you look at it, the neophyte, what is the inspiration to take up devotional service, right? Problems, right? Emotional problems, financial problems, intellectual problems, like that. Only the jnani on that point, he wants to know God as a person, but who had that mood before joining? You know, some devotees like to go, no, I was a jnani. No, you're probably a jigyasu. You know, but the point is because by association of devotees and chanting and taking prasad, then one naturally, very quickly comes to become stable. Then one may become a jnani and from there move into, you know, madhyamadhikari, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in here, you see is that the principle of here now we're defining devotional service and what is actually pure devotional service, because this is an expansion of that verse which Rupa Goswami is defining that. So in this study, it's being made very clear what is pure devotional service and what's not. It's not saying, the discussion now is not how to engage the conditioned nature in the Lord's service. Right? So there's no need to defend. No, but we can, no. It's a matter of, this is what is pure devotional service, so you know what's not. Right? So, you know, surely one takes the conditioned nature, and one, let's say, one has to have facilities, so one has some kind of occupation. And there, and that one reason for that is because one has some kind of, one has a situation in ashram, you know, most likely along the line in grihastha, right? So one's going to take those and connect it to Krishna. And that's going to be devotional service. But as is pointed out, is if there's interest in those things, it's not pure devotional service. That one's situated in that doesn't define that it can't be devotion, pure devotional service. Right? It's that the interest in it makes it mixed devotional service. Right? One's doing the job, one really likes the job, one likes doing all those things, and one's connecting to Krishna, so it's mixed. That's what it means, mixed. Mixed doesn't mean there's no devotional service, because we'll use the term mixed as if it's some kind of, you know, garbage or something. No, mixed means devotional service is there, proper devotional service, but it's mixed with also not proper. Right? You know, it's not that, oh, you know, it's mixed with inferior devotional service. No, the devotional service may be proper, but there's also elements that are not proper.
Yes. Is there a tendency in mixed devotional service to kind of purify itself?
If one knows the goal, that's why it's being pointed out. In other words, as long as you know that it's not the ideal situation, and you're trying to connect everything to Krishna, right, and one's able to identify the situation, then one will progress. I think the next part is it starts to describe this thing of the jnana and vairag naturally come from the performance of karma yoga.
That's why it's called buddhi yoga, because at that stage, analyzing is very important.
Yes, because buddhi means you're using the intelligence. That's the central feature that you're doing. It's not just sentiment or just the attachment to peace and yoga and all these things, or the attachment to just knowledge. But buddhi infers intelligence that you're applying it. Jnana is just knowledge. So it's using intelligence, but buddhi means it's intelligently applied and understood. So we see it's dynamic.
So basically we're using intelligence to find what's Anyavila Sutta and what's not.
Yes. Yeah. And to see that we're as close as we can be connected to pure devotional service we are. In other words, in our conditioned position, there'll be naturally some mix, but how much mix? Like that. In other words, why use more mix than needs to be? Right? But the mix doesn't necessarily mean the situation. The mix means is the mentality. As we see, Ambarish, she's the emperor of the world, a family person, but he's cited for being the example of someone who's Atmanivedan, who engages all the nine processes. Right? So it's not the situation. But because we're conditioned to situations, right? That's where we get our security, our identity. Therefore, there's recommendation that certain situations are considered better. So a more detached, more renounced is better in the way that there's less to entangle you. But Prabhupada also mentions the pauper is proud of his penny. So even you have nothing, you can still be proud of it. Right? That story of Ramanuja's servant. He was a wrestler. I think he'd do massage and things like that. He'd also, I think, teach wrestling to the king. That was his occupation, how he maintained himself and his service was, you do, you know, service for Ramanuja. Now, he also, Ramanuja also had all the sannyasis. So they, because they were, you know, very, very staunch and all that. And so in a discussion, he was making this point, but somehow or another the sannyasis were, well, you know, but he's got so much facility because he's working for the king, so he has a big place to live in. You know, his wife is covered in gold. He has all kinds of facilities. But they were saying, but he's just, you know, basically a materialist. You know, they're engaged in devotional service, but he, you know, you have to be renounced to engage. So then Ramanuja made an arrangement. He called some of the brahmacharis. And then in the evening, right, after the sannyasis had gone to sleep and that, then he sent one group of brahmacharis to go into the, how do you say, where the sannyasis would hang their clothes, because you have one set of clothes, you rinse it, hang it up at night, and then in the morning it's dry, you put it on. To go in and rip off exactly the width of one kopan, right? And then hang the cloth up and like that. So that was done. And then he sent another group of brahmacharis to that wrestler's house. So the wrestler's with the king, because the king will spend his, during the day, means up to sunset he's, how do you say, absorbed in his work as a kshatriya, right? Court and all these different things. After that, then that's time with the family, his own personal pursuits, like here learning wrestling or music or, you know, whatever else he wants to do, that's his time. So naturally, that the sannyasis, when he gets to, they'll take rest, you know. So and so the wife, it's evening, so she was resting, but waiting for the husband to come back, because he'll come back late. So she was fully dressed, and that, and waiting, he'll come back, he'll take his meal, all these things. So she was lying there. So the brahmacharis came into the house and climbed in the window, and so they see her there, and they think she's asleep. So they go up and start stealing all her gold ornaments. Right? So, and then she's thinking, she recognizes these are the brahmacharis from the ashram, so she's thinking, wow, must be, there must be something, some problem or some. So they're having to go out and steal to try to get the money to, you know, do whatever. So she just, you know, was quiet and laid there. So they took off everything on one side. Then when they had finished everything on one side, then she thought, well, you know, they can have the gold on the other side. So then she started to turn over. And then from turning over, they thought she was waking up, so then they got scared and ran off. So then Ramanuja told them that after they steal everything, wait and see when what happens and the husband comes home and everything, right? You know? And then the other group of brahmacharis are supposed to wait and see what the sannyasis do when they come and find their cloth, right? So then later in the evening, then the husband comes home. And the wife greets him at the door, and he's looking at there. It's a bit odd. One side is all the ornaments, and the other side there aren't any. And he's kind of like, what happened? So, you know, comes in, sits down, and then she starts to explain is that these brahmacharis came, and they needed, you know, they were taking the gold, so they must have needed something. So, you know, I let them take all the gold. And so then I turned over, and then I guess they thought I woke up, so they ran off and got scared. So then he started chastising her. Says, you know, says, if you hadn't turned over, they would have taken the gold on the other side. But because you thought it's my gold to give, you're so attached that this is your gold to give away. You know, it's, you know, this mixed with the karma, that if you had just left it, it's Krishna's gold, and then how much they can take, it's up to him, and then they'll take the gold. Like that. Says, oh, okay. You know, so they were discussing the devotion. You know, and then the sannyasis, they got up and they come and, you know, exactly one width of a kopan. So that means somebody else needed a kopan and I didn't do it. So then they started arguing amongst themselves that you stole, you know, you ripped the cloth off mine. So it turned into a big riot. So then Ramanuja asked, you know, for all the brahmacharis to tell what happened. So they told all the stories. Then Ramanuja called the sannyasis in and then explained what was the difference of the two. So you're getting so upset over a piece of a rag, I write that, you know, that, you know, someone's taken it. And while here, they're discussing that, you know, they weren't in the proper state of consciousness of detachment, you know, to allow them to take all this gold. You know, we're not talking about a little gold, we're talking about a lot of gold, you know, like that. That makes sense. So the situations help. In other words, if one's more detached in situation, means one's dealing with a smaller volume of material energy. So naturally, it's less trouble. Right? So naturally, you'll leave more time for direct devotional activities. That's the only advantage. Right? It's not that it's better because it's better. It's better only because less time. If you have a big, huge house, it takes longer to clean than if you have a small house. Right? And when you're not cleaning the house, you could be chanting japa or something else. But it's not that the big house is a problem, because cleaning it, it's Krishna's house, so you're cleaning the house for Krishna. Right? But it's still, one has that big house because of certain facility. One has a family, a big family, or whatever one's doing. You understand? So the impetus for it is based on the conditioned nature. But how you deal with it, that can be pure devotional service. Does that make sense? So, whatever is one's nature, if one is more detached or not, or something, Prabhu? You move over down here a bit. That's kind of above there is the ladies' spot. There's no ladies you can sit there. But. Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, it doesn't. I mean, there's plenty of space. We don't have to use, exaggerated European spacing. No. Because the boys didn't put down the blankets today. I'm not sure why, but. Yes.
So Maharaj just said that one should not engage more in mixed devotional service than one needs.
Yes.
So, under what principle do we ascertain how much needs to be there for our conditioned nature? What are the guidelines to know how much we need to engage and how much we should not pursue unnecessarily?
It means as we understand pure devotional service, then we can understand what's not. So understanding what's not, then what isn't, taking that and contemplating why we're involved in it, then if from that contemplation one can move on from it or bring it to the platform of purity, then the work is done. What's left is what you have to deal with. Does that make sense? In other words, when one is more purified, then one doesn't have distraction. If one has distraction, that's what one connects to Krishna, right? That is your karma yoga, jnana yoga, but it's not pure devotional service. It's mixed. But if you understand what pure devotional service is and that's what you're endeavoring for, it's not a problem because it's progressive. So when we make the point about mixed devotional service, that's being made for two reasons. One is so you can tell the difference between what's pure devotional service and what's mixed. And for those who feel mixed is fine. They're doing a great job. And so nobody should bother them, you know. You know, why don't you do this rule? Hey, I've been here for the last 10 years. Who are you? They're happy with their mixed devotional service. Like, so it's brought to point out that's not enough. Right? Because that's why there's, how you say? That's why the process of devotee families having children is important for the preaching mission. Because there's plenty of people who are situated in mixed devotional service and didn't get to pure devotional service. So it's another chance. You understand? That's what it is. It's not, you know, your best shot at going to Harvard. If you want that, you should have been born in Connecticut. You know, in one of those, how do you say, your families, what do they call them? Your Boston Brahmin families. Yeah, these Boston Brahmins, they're the families that were in America before the revolution. And that they're, you know, well-situated, wealthy, committed to charity, good works. You never see them or hear about them. You know, they're always out of the way. You know, so when we're talking about these families, you know, that are have these cultures and that are very, a lot similar to ours, just without Krishna, we're talking about those groups. Yeah, more emotive goods. Of course, they're cutthroat business people and all that, and that's how they have their money. But the point is they won't get involved in the common culture because they know it's common. You know, of course, there's false ego. They don't know why it's better to be seen. It's just inherent that to be pious and to be more cultured is better, rather than God wants you to be that way. You know, so does that make sense? So being successful in the material world, then better one takes birth in one of those families. Because then automatically you're supposed to go to one of the top schools. You know, if you don't, you know, what's the meaning? You know, it's like that. You're supposed to do well. You're supposed to be situated in society. Like that. But taking birth in the devotee family means you're trying to continue where you left off and bring the mixed devotional service to pure devotional service. But generally, being born in a devotee family means that one was more advanced in devotional service. And if one wasn't so advanced in devotional service, one takes birth, one goes to the heavenly planets and comes back and takes birth in the family of pious, like what I talked about there, religious families, noble families, that kind of family, where your first shot is at good material facility, but you have the time to take up God consciousness. Does that make sense? So when the children of devotees are expected to act as if they were born in just pious families, then that's a waste of time. Yes?
We also see children in devotional families who distance themselves from the movement.
Yeah, I'm saying it happens, because the point is, this individual, you can choose. It's up to you.
It just seems weird to take birth in a devotional family and then go the other way.
Yeah, but it's the same time as one comes, joins Krishna consciousness, and then goes away. You know what I'm saying? I remember our temple, every 3 months there'd be so many devotees in it that had joined that you literally had to sleep on the stairs. There wasn't any place to sleep in the temple. And then after 3 months it would be down to, you know, 15 devotees again. And then after that go back up to you know, every month 5-10 people would join, but also 5-10 people would leave. So, you know, it's common. It's not an uncommon thing. So Prabhupada makes a point, don't be surprised who leaves, be surprised who stays. That's the point. So all these things, it's understood. The difficulty is not that Krishna consciousness is hard. We're just so used to functioning on the material platform. That's the difficulty. So we're just so used to that, we find our identity there, so we're comfortable there. And so, you know, yeah. So it happens. Like that. Yes. Yes, yes. Because otherwise one can, you know, be there in the West, have one's all everything like that, and then sell everything and move to Mayapur and, you know, this and that, and then 6 months to 3 years later, then they're back where they were. You know what I'm saying? So changing the situation, though it is not easy, but it's easier than changing the mentality. So if changing the situation, then you're working on changing the mentality, then you can make that. So in other words, if someone comes here with the idea that it's going to be a determination to work hard at Krishna consciousness, then that changes the situation and that determination will match. If one's coming here because, oh, it would be nice to live in, you know, the spiritual world, and that is just sentiment, which is a good sentiment, but the idea that you have to work hard, you know, just as hard, but now you're working hard spiritually, you know. You don't have to work as hard materially, but spiritually one has to work. Then the point. So the idea is that it's such hard work there, but you have to do the same work here. Right? So in other words, if it costs you 1/10 to live here as it is in the West, then that means now that coming here, now you have 9/10 to work on spiritual life. But instead, if we just drop it down to 1/10 economics and 1/10, you know, the other, then it won't last. The desires will come up, the weeds will grow. Does that make sense? So that's the point. Then it will be, the change of situation can be advantageous. Now, we even use it for, like when somebody takes up devotional service. So many things that they may have been involved in before, we'll just say is all Maya. They distance themselves from it, right? You know, just like the brahmachari is with the family. So he distanced himself from the family to absorb himself in the devotional process, right? Having done that and become situated in devotional service nicely, now assessing the mood and the nature, if he finds that it would be good for him to situate himself in family life, he'll be able to do that now and be Krishna conscious. While before, there's a good chance there wouldn't have been any possibility. You know, like that. Does that make sense? You know, because generally when you see devotees talking about being Krishna conscious in household life, they talk about how much they're engaged in direct devotional service, which is, of course, your ideal. But it's only how much of the day can you do. So they're chanting their rounds as opposed to, let's say, some other grihasthas. They do kirtan with the family, or, you know, they're very careful at taking bishad, you know, or they have programs at their house. Does that make sense? So they spend some time reading or studying. Did I leave anything out? Okay, go to Mangalarti. Worship the deity. Okay, and then? So, nothing's been left out, so that's a complete thing. That's very Krishna, that's good. But now, that's also where it ends. It ends there. When they're not doing any one of those things, they're sitting in the living room doing what?
Whatever.
Yeah, they're in the bathroom doing what? They're in their bedroom doing what? They're rummaging around the garage doing what? That's the point. Is so those things can be connected. Therefore, the brahmachari with the proper training will be able to see in those situations. Because if the point is you're in the kitchen and you're dealing with a pot and washing a pot, or in your house and washing a pot, the principle of seeing the connection to Krishna is the same. You know, cleaning the floor, this. So the brahmachari does all the fundamental things. It's just all the emotional elements are left out. It's not your bucket, you know. You know, it's like that. Does that make sense? You know, so, yeah. So that's the whole idea, is that changing the situation can help, but it's not the change of situation that identifies the advancement. You know, generally you would take it, okay, someone's in one situation that's not very ideal. Let's say they're living very far away and don't come around. So they change the situation, move closer to the temple, you know, try to come to the temple more and do those things. So he's changed the situation. So you'll take that as good. Right? Because the change of situation was in pursuance of Krishna consciousness. Right? But one has to see with time, you know, if they actually use it. But in that they've made the step, one is encouraging, one tries, because otherwise why would they make the step? Does that make sense? So there's always this balance between, the mentality is the most important, but the mentality is still expressed through the situation. Right? Tattva is you're approaching the tattva through the padartha. Right? So now it's just a matter of, is that padartha seen as spiritual or is seen as material? That's the thing. Is that okay? Yes.
It means to change the mentality, means to change consciousness.
Change consciousness, yeah. So change consciousness, so that means then how you look at your conditioned nature, it has situations and activities, desires that just are inherent in it. But one can connect those to Krishna or not. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like... Yeah, favorite, like say someone by nature is a cook, so then he comes and cooks for Krishna. Let's say he works in a restaurant like that, and he's a good cook. So since he can cook, then that's something you do for Krishna. So he comes to the temple and cooks the Sunday feast, or helps with that, or comes on festivals, or, you know, or with time as he becomes more then he thinks, hey, I could cook at the devotee restaurant. You know, okay, I won't get as much and all this and that, and but you know, at least it's devotional service, and you know, it works out. So he could do those things, but he's still addressing the conditioned nature, you know, which is fine. It's progressive, but the point is that element is still not the pure devotional service. That he is taking his conditioned nature of cooking, which is his occupation, and doing that for Krishna. That's not the pure devotional service. That he's cooking for Krishna, that's pure devotional service. But that he's cooking for Krishna because that's his nature, that's not pure devotional service. Does that make sense? It's in pursuance of pure devotional service. That's why it's valuable. That's why it's making this fine distinction, because otherwise we think, well, I'm engaging my nature, so it's pure devotional service. If the mentality is focused on the service, then it's pure devotional service. But if there's still that enthusiasm with the subject matter itself, rather than it's just, wow, we could do this for Krishna and that for Krishna, and well, you know, you see, you know, you're looking through all the junk that the devotees have in the corner of pots and pans, and you find something that no one knows it is, but you know what it is. Wow, we could do this now for Krishna. Then that's okay. That enthusiasm is you're simply seeing how to improve the Krishna. It's not that you like this, and so that's why you're so inspired. It's a very fine line. You know, it's a very fine line. Is the inspiration because that's your nature, or is the inspiration because it's the service? You're engaging the nature, right? Arjuna wants to serve Krishna, so he'll fight for him. Or Arjuna is going to fight, so Krishna says, so therefore see it in the spiritual way and connect it to him. They're two different things, right? The one is that you're starting, I'm a Kshatriya, I fight, and so therefore I'll fight for Krishna. The other is, I'm a devotee, I want to serve Krishna, but I can't cook, I don't this, but I can fight, so I'll fight for Krishna. Yes?
So this goes a little back to when we were talking about fear of surrender means we're afraid that Krishna's going to do something horrible to us. Whereas
yes.
Krishna actually wants to engage our nature, but we have a tendency to focus on our nature.
Yeah. So to remove... The means, in other words, the natural thing is one is focusing on it, the removal of one's attachment to one's conditioned nature is engaging that conditioned nature in Krishna's service. But if in engaging that Krishna nature, I mean your nature in Krishna's service, you forget about the progression of that, he might take it away. Like one's a manager, one manages for Krishna, but then one just gets into the management and things come up and that's such a hassle and this, one's forgotten actually Krishna. But you're still getting benefit because you're doing it for Krishna. But your mentality at that moment's not. Krishna may arrange something just to make you frustrated with management. Because the management at that point is not actually useful for your advancement because it's distracting you. Right? Well, when you take it all away, then what are you going to do if you're sincere? You're just going to sit down and chant and read and stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? You know, when it bothers you, you know, you go and get in your car, go out for a drive, go for a walk, go to your house, go on your computer. But when it completely falls apart, you just go and sit in front of the deities and chant. So that's what we want. So if you'll do that anyway, you'll manage in that, you'll do all these things, you're absorbed in these things, you know, you're into the kirtan as much as everybody else and all that, then what's the need to remove it? Because you're organizing an environment that other devotees can be absorbed in devotional service, so management's important. Right? But if you're completely forgetting that and you have to do this and that, and so when everybody's having this big program, you're on the on email, then, you know, better you're chanting. Yes?
My grandma, Shastakaswami, he said that when they were building the long building, it was so busy, he was just always busy and never had time. He couldn't be in the temple because he had to be out there. And then one evening he could go to the kirtan.
Yes. So it means that you're, yeah. So that's the meaning of conditioning. Because if there's no conditioning, if the work needs to get done, you do the work. When it doesn't, then you're going to naturally just go back and do some direct activity. Right? Does that make sense? But even the direct activities require organization. Right? You know, they had the, what is it? Just in Germany, they just had this big Kirtan Mela. But that was a lot of management to do that. Organization and this and that and so many things. You had like 1,000 devotees. So it's a lot of stuff. So it's... But the point is if one just sees the management or forgets, and one could take part and one doesn't, you know, then that's the problem. So the thing is because of the devotional service and all that, then he could see it when it happened. But if one's not as purified, one may not see it and then get it distracted. And then when it's pointed out, you'll say, no, but I'm doing it for Krishna, which you are. But the point is there's you're doing it for Krishna, but then there's also the attachment to what you're doing for Krishna, rather than it's Krishna, because the lakshana is Krishna's pleasure. It's being done to please Krishna, not because you like doing it.
Yeah.
But it's not that you won't like doing it, because if Krishna likes it, you'll like it. He's the complete whole. If he's happy, you're connecting yourself with the complete whole, you'll be happy. You know what I'm saying? Does that make sense? So that's the point. That's where what you're saying. We don't have to be worried that connecting ourselves to Krishna won't be nice. It's just that by our definition of our conditioned nature, we may or may not see it as, you know, nice.
I want it to be nice in this particular way.
Yes, that's the thing. But then that means we're attachment to that, so that will be a distraction from pure devotional service. Because for Krishna, just being a little happier here isn't good enough. Even having, you know, the heavenly pleasures, the pleasure of being Brahma isn't enough. Because that's the level he interacts at is much more deep than that. So unless one comes to the pure devotional platform, the quality of interaction, therefore the quality of happiness, won't be that great. It's interesting how saying it won't be that great, it can actually have two meanings. It won't be that great by meaning the quality of it or that, or it won't be that great meaning the volume, you know. Yes?
But it seems that in order to understand this type of topic, we need a constant guidance.
Yes, so that's why we always hear, chant, associate with devotees. Because if the idea is that there'll be a time when you see it and someone else doesn't. And another time when they see it and you don't. Because, in other words, those areas where you don't have an attachment, or especially when you had but it has reduced in that area, then you'll be able to point it out to someone else. Sometimes you don't have it in the area, you won't notice it because you don't even notice the area. You know, like that. So, you know, it's like, does that make sense? You know, it's like does flower arrangements, so you don't notice stuff like that. So they've done it, you just know the altar looks nice. You don't know why, but it looks nice, you know. Does that make sense? But someone that they have, you know, attachment aesthetics, so then that is, they're able to deal with it, so then they can see where the other person is making the vases, so there's some element of attachment there. So they're trying to find the best spot for the vase to be seen rather than the best spot where it'll look best for Krishna, the balance. So there you can really see it, but it kind of blocks his feet and doesn't balance with everything else. So a little farther back where you only see 2/3 of it, but then, you know, or you can't see the vase, or, you know, things like that. So then these things you could point out because you're able to see it, you know. Does that make sense? So that's the advantage. That's why the association of devotees is so important. That's why Prabhupada's creating a sabha. You know, technically this is the Vishwa Vaishnava Raja Sabha. Right? So Vishwa means international. And sabha means, you know, association, like that. Or, you know, the society, like that. You know? And so it's about Raja, means Krishna. You know, and Lord Chaitanya. So we see is that's what the society is. So that's Rupa Goswami established. Because it's that association. Because that's why it's very important to understand that the process works, because there's some area where you'll advance nicely in, where there's less attachment, it'll advance. The other areas may not. But if we say, because this area is not, he's not advancing, then that'll be a problem. Because, let's say, they're very absorbed in kirtan, but they really are trippy about prasad. So in kirtan, they can give you advice, so they can be very good association, very inspirational. But you might avoid sitting with them at prasad. You know what I'm saying? But it's not that because they make so much trouble there that, oh, they're kirtan. No, that's the whole point. Is somebody's going to use one aspect very nicely. So if everybody is situated according to what they do best for Krishna, rather than what they think they should be doing, or, you know, based on some, you know, other mundane element of, well, he's older, he's been here longer, he's a, you know, a senior disciple, or this and that. That's not why one should be situated. It's who can do it nicely, because then people will be inspired. Right? Someone's a good manager, even he's been there 3 years, better he's the president than the guy who's been there 25 years and just kvetching over in the corner about everybody else who tries to do anything. Right? That makes sense. It's really interesting using specific terminology and it not meaning anybody, anything to anybody. So. Okay, does that make sense? So we're not discussing how to engage it. That's what we were discussing with the Gita. How to engage it. But then after describing that, then it came to the point of pure devotional service. Right? So since that's what we're trying to get to, then here in this analyzation, now we're just separating very, very carefully what is that, because otherwise we know that from Gita that pure devotional service where it's just done for Krishna and all that, but the whole thing was is Krishna, Arjuna are engaging his varna and ashram in Krishna's service. So one might be surprised to see here that he's saying that your occupational duties according to one's caste or creed is still not devotional service, still jnana karma adi. Right? So that means, but Krishna wanted Arjuna to fight, and Krishna was professing pure devotional service, and he was professing engaging your nature in his service. So that means it's not that he engaged the nature that makes the pure devotional service, it's the mentality of engaging it that makes pure devotional service. Does that make sense? So then we can discern. So that's the importance of looking at it in this way. At other times, we'll look at it how to engage it. Yes.
So the nectar of devotion starts from Saradama Parigyaja.
Yeah, it's just finding devotional service. It means the mixta and all that is there, but how to engage that, that's in the Gita. Right? That's in the Gita. So nectar devotion, you could say, would be taking the devotional perspective of Srimad Bhagavatam. Because Bhagavatam is the book. Right?
The book.
Right? It's the book. So it like means every sampradaya has their book. Like, you know, like for the Shankarites, it's Vedanta Sutra. You know, some others, then it'll be the Upanishads or a Veda. So for us, it's Bhagavatam. So we see everything else in connection with Bhagavatam. So Gita is explaining what is the process of understanding the devotional, the material, and how to connect all that to Krishna. Then Bhagavatam will give example of that process. Right? And it'll explain it on a more developed level. Right? So in a sense, yes.
I think I read in Jiva Goswami's, in the beginning of his commentary on Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, he says Jiva Goswami has written this Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu to explain the Bhakti Rasa in Srimad Bhagavatam.
Mm. Wow, very nice. So, therefore, all those things are understood that it'll already have been covered in the Mahabharata, right? The culture and how to connect that to the Lord. Now, this is the fine point. Yes. He was saying that Jiva Goswami, in his commentary on Nectar Devotion, right, is in the introduction, is saying that Nectar Devotion is explaining the devotional process given in Srimad Bhagavatam. Is that?
The Bhakti Ras.
The Bhakti Ras in Srimad Bhagavatam. So Bhakti Ras Amrita Sindhu. So then it's an appropriate name.
Okay. Maharaj, from this perspective, the defined pure devotional service in that example of the cup is half full, half empty. Mm-hmm. We're taking the half empty. It needs to go there.
Yeah, it means we're looking at what is making the half empty right now. But we're acknowledging, because you'll see as we go through in these words, we're acknowledging that it's half full. So that's good. But unless you know it's half empty also, you won't make it full. You know, otherwise then one becomes complacent. Complacency means is you think it's good enough, or you know, you don't have to worry about it, it'll get there, you know, so like that. It means one's not in anxiety about it. One doesn't stay awake at night that I'm not a pure and alloyed devotee or this and that. You know. So that's not there. But the point is it's just you know what's there. It's just what's there or not. Like you want to make a preparation, you look in the basket, right? And then you see what's there and what's not there. So what's there, great. What's not there, you get. Like that. Is that?
You said, Maharaj, the Bhagavad Gita deals with the distinction between spirit and matter, and then you add the dimension of devotion through inner devotion.
Yes, but Gita also deals with it, so it's a complete ABCs of Krishna consciousness. But Nectar Devotion is specifically focusing on the devotional process itself, like that. So that's why Rupa Goswami, when you get into Dasyam, then the point is being made that Varnashram is not devotional service. Why is that point being made? Because you see, in Gita, one would get the strong point is performing your duties to please Krishna. So then one would take the Varnashram is Krishna conscious. No, it's a superior tool to use. And the Shris, Madhvas, generally all these groups, they use Varnashram very, very strongly, like that. So for pure devotional service, it may have a stronger element, but for pure unalloyed devotional, so because he's saying Krishna Anushilinam, to Krishna, then Varnashram isn't the point at all. This is then where the devotees will make the mistake, therefore we don't need Varnashram, we don't worry about it. No, it's still the culture. But it won't be as prominent that the proper performance of it is the symptom of advancement or surrender, as opposed to the proper performance just means, you know, your situation is good, but what are you doing with it? You know what I'm saying? So there's always that what's behind, the subtle what's behind. You know, which is the nature. You know, somebody does something very nice and you wonder, why is he doing that? You know, so you want to know what's behind.
What am I going to
do? Yeah, so it's all like that. So it's the nature. So here we're giving the end of the line of that process. Right. So it's... So Gita is giving everything, but Nectar Devotion is just bringing that out. That's why it's given as the second major book in the study.
It's starting from Krishna's situation instead of alone, what Krishna likes.
Yeah, you could say that. Yeah, it's in other words, it's taking that Sarvadharma Paritya Jasa, what's in the middle, you know, the middle chapters and the 18th chapter, and then taking that as a foundation. Like that. But the point is that's what is pure devotional service. Now to get yourself there, then you need all those other chapters. Right? So that defines that. It's already being done there, so you don't have to repeat it. You know, that's the point. Right? So that's why you see in a scripture, unless it's adding some new points. You know, new points or a depth of perspective, then it doesn't describe something that describes something somewhere else. You know, like Ayurveda, that gets fully into it. But there are other scriptures that will bring up something about it, but they're bringing up some other thing connected with the philosophy more, or some aspect that's in connection, how Ayurveda connects to that particular conversation they're having. So it'll be there. You know, so it'll add something, but it's not that you would have something else. No, Charaka has already spoken what's important. You know, so everything else will just be in support of that. So there's no need of something else. So Gita is already the ABCs. There's no need of something else. Right? Does that make sense? You know, Prabhupada's written the purports. There's no need of more purports. There can be expansion on explaining what's in Prabhupada's purports. But we don't need another commentary. But you can have commentaries on the commentary. Right? So you have Bhashya and then you have Anubhashya. They're different. Because the Bhashya means it's a particular perspective. We don't need more perspectives. We already have.
Bhashya is the perspective of the mind.
Yeah.
Bhashya just tried to
explain. Yeah, just means, in other words, Prabhupada's explained something here and there's very subtle points there. We may not catch it, so then an Anubhashya may bring that out and show how, you know, bring, you know, some light to more of what Prabhupada was talking about there. Because in another place it'll be, but we may not connect it to. You know. In another purport, then he'll explain it in a different way, but we'll just see it in relation to that, and this in relationship to this, we don't connect it. So that's the advantage of the thematic. You start to see all those different things. So like that. Or unless it's like a grammatical explanation to show how what Prabhupada's saying. Like Prabhupada said, you know, this word is important in this verse. So that means it is the subject. Grammatically, it's the subject. So that's why it's important. Because it's the subject that's going to do the activity. It's the subject that has an interest to interact with the object. It's by the performance of the activity of the subject that you get the result. Right, and the subject is performing that activity because of some past reason, and because and therefore in that situation. So there, so the subject becomes the prominent word, right? But it still has to be seen in connection with the verb that's the action being done. Otherwise, you may get so absorbed in that you just see the situation and don't see actually what's happening. Right, and then, but how that action is happening, it's not just happening, it's happening in relationship to the nature of the object. Right? So then, something like that, you'll see it. But it's still, it's subject with this particular object. And therefore, there's this particular activity, this particular verb. Does that make sense? So one might have grammatical explanation. So that comes out because the grammar is very logical. And so by explaining according to grammar, one starts to break down the pieces and see where they go. Does that make sense? Because otherwise it may not make as much sense. So it's another way that there can be commentaries. Does that make sense? Like that.
That's because we're conditioned, we cannot see that. Especially our conditioned part of our devotional service.
But that's why this is here, so that you can see it.
So, is that why it's so essential that the spiritual master will guide us, I mean, to which extent engage our conditioned nature, to which extent to try to renounce it?
That's there, but it's the instruction of the spiritual master that's important, not his personal input. You understand? Because the personal input, we feel comfortable with that, because it's an emotional element, right? So because we need that, it means it's by the grace of the spiritual master, then we can do that, so we need that the spiritual master is doing that. So it's, so therefore, for me to advance, the spiritual master to do that, therefore it's his obligation to do this for me. But he's already done it. We have to make the endeavor to take the instructions and understand them. And we do that in the association of devotees. So we hear the different realizations, understandings.
So that's why there's Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. And
yes. Sadhu. So Shastra is your foundation. Then we hear from Guru and Sadhu so that we understand what's going on. Does that make sense? So guru is given the direction. Sadhu supports that. Right? So we see it in context of what guru has said. Guru is speaking what the shastra is saying. Does that make sense?
So guru is generally more the bigger picture, and sadhu is more in the detail.
Yeah, unless here sadhu can also mean siksha guru, who is on that same platform of spiritual relationship. But it doesn't. So sadhu is very broad. Sadhu can also include previous acharyas, or guru can include the previous acharyas. So, like that. So there's different, you know. So what's directly in the parampara we would take as guru, but then let's say Sridhar Swami, we take that as sadhu. But that sadhu is what all the gurus in the line base their descriptions on.
So he's okay.
Yeah, he's okay. Seeing the miserable, seeing the miserable condition of the living entity in the material world, the most compassionate Lord mercifully implants the Bhakti Lata Bij in his heart. This seed is known as Shraddha or faith, and it contains within it the undeveloped manifestation of Bhava or the first sprout of divine love for Bhagavan. Right. So this is a very important point. That we'll take it that, oh, all these things, they're way off there and there's nothing here. But no, that element is already down here. That element, that aspect of Bhava is already here. Right? It's already part of the process. Right? It's not something else. But it still has its natural manifestation. You know, it's just like you have a seed, it has in it a huge tree. But when it is a seedling, you can't expect to get, you know, use the bark and the fruit and the leaves and the flowers for, you know, medicinal purposes. Because it's not there yet. But the principle that will be there later is there already now. So we have a problem putting that advancement way off, though the principles are already here. Or we take it that, no, those advances, in other words, the mentality of it, those elements are already there. The form of it is going to manifest according to the advancement. You know, in other words, does that make sense? It is a tree, but it's a small tree. So from the seed to a full bloom tree, it's still a tree. But the form of manifestation, that has gradation. Does that make sense? Then we can just differentiate between what is the Mayavad aspect of that. Well, it can't be devotional service because there's some mix in it. Or we can do, you know, we don't care for all that. We can do anything on take a form at an advanced level, use it as a junior level. Right? In other words, when we see it's the form that's devotional service, then we miss that it's the mood. So then we'll make a mistake. So unless it's a very sophisticated development of the form, we'll say it's not advanced. You know? Or we don't see the mood, and therefore we think the form is also it. So therefore we can use the form at a junior state. You understand? So both of them make the same mistake. They see the form and not the mood. Yeah, it'll be Nyamara. Yes.
One Bhaktivinoda will say that the seed of Shraddha contains the undeveloped manifestation of Bhav, and instead of saying undeveloped manifestation of Prem.
Because Prem you have to cultivate in the association of the Nitya Siddhas. When in the association of the Prema Bhakti, Premi Bhaktas, then you can cultivate Prema. So Bhava is that natural state of the living entity. So now the living entity inherently has that element of Bhava, in that if you see your situation, your identity, your activities, your results in relation to Krishna, then that situation will adjust from Bhava to Prema. So we'll call it bhava. If one doesn't see it like that, then we just call it the liberated platform. Right? That's why we have to make, he's making the point that bhava is inherently there, because that's the natural situation that the living entity will progress to prema from. Right? Like that. But to make sure we progress, the point is being made is that it's really nice being liberated. You know, it's like an ocean of happiness compared to a drop here. But that's only compared to a drop of the unlimited ocean of bhakti. You know, because otherwise we were comfortable with it last time and didn't progress, so we're here. So to make sure we don't make that mistake again, it's always pointed out there's something beyond, and that's prema. Does that make sense? So bhava is inherent. Because the seed known as Shraddha, bhava. So the manifest of bhava is that but it's the first sprout of love for God. It means of the 10 stages of prema, then bhava is the first. Right? Does that make sense?
So the Lord mercifully implanted that tilapa bhiji in his heart. So at which moment does it happen? When somebody knowingly does accept to do service for Krishna, or it can also be by Agyata Sukriti?
No, Agyata Sukriti means it's by the association of devotees. Having that association, then one tries to take up that mood. That's where Shraddha begins. It doesn't just happen. You know, not walking along, a lightning bolt hits you, or a light bulb goes on. No, it's by the association of devotees, then one gets Shraddha.
The Bhakti Lata bit is when Shraddha just stops hearing?
Yeah. Means, see, when you associate with devotees, but you don't try to take up their mood, that's called a Agyata Sukriti. Right? They're there doing kirtan, you look at it, oh, nice, okay, cool. And then you walk on to your office and all that. That's a Agyata Sukriti. You know, when you start thinking, you know, what are they doing? I want to associate. You know, and then you hear from them about it. Then that's the point where it switches from Agyata Sukriti to devotional service. Yeah. But it's Krishna who puts it. But it's only in the association of devotees. So when we say Shraddha to praying, but actually unless there's preliminary association of devotees, there is no Shraddha. And by Shraddha, then you want to take up the association of devotees. But now instead of it just being, you know, not scientific, now it is. Does that make sense? Yeah.
A site that I just read yesterday, hidden from Ananta Sangita. 1 billion of lifetimes of pious activities gives Shraddha.
Yeah, but does it say what Shraddha? What pious piety? Because you have karma sukriti, jnana sukriti, and bhakti sukriti.
I presume that that's the mixture of.
But you're presuming, but I'm asking, what does it say? Did it say in the same? So that's why one always has to see that in relationship to what the acharyas say. Like that. Because in Krishna book, when, let's say Krishna's with his sons. So there's 10 sons. So one of them is sitting on his lap, or two of them are sitting on his lap. So the others who are not sitting on their lap, then they're marveling at what pious activities they must have done before to be able to sit on the Supreme Personality of Godhead's lap. Right? Now, they're not talking about an Ashwamedha yagya or helping an old lady across the street. You know, putting all your old clothes that you don't want anyway in a box instead of them being thrown out, then they get, you know, they go to somebody. They're talking about bhakti sukriti. You know, in other words, how much devotional service they perform that now the Lord is so pleased that. You know what I'm saying? But we generally use the word sukriti. You know, it's inherently just means karma sukriti. If we say pious activity, the inherent thing we'll think of is from doing karma kanda. You understand? Just like we say Shakta, then we will automatically think, you know, Kali worship or Durga worship like that. Does that make sense? But Shakti just means the Lord's energy. We're also Shakti. You know. But it generally means that, right? You know? Or a Tantra. Then we'll think it also means, you know, something to do with Durga or like that. But Tantra just means ritual. So you have mantra and tantra. This is the mantra you chant, this is the tantra you perform. Right? So there is sattvic tantras. But there's also the Shaiva tantras and the you know, Durga tantras, all these things. It's just generic. So karma, we just take it like that. But it doesn't mean. But how many billion lives, you said?
1 billion.
Okay, so not that bad. But 1 billion of pious activities. Pious activity means what? So 1 billion lifetimes of pious activity. So if you are living a lifetime, which means you have to be living a lifestyle. So where do you get that lifestyle from?
Shastra.
That means only someone who's following Shastra will live a full lifetime. So then, but otherwise, the guy's done a pious activity. He gave some charity. But that was, you know, 5 seconds out of his lifetime. So how many 5 seconds are there in one lifetime? So it may take millions of lifetimes to get one lifetime, a billion. So the point is he's following Shastra. Now, to actually follow Shastra, what do you have to have?
A guru.
A guru. Now, that guru may just be a Karmakanda, a Jnanakanda guru, but he may also be Vaishnava. So the point is by following the Shastric lifestyle, you know, basically properly for a billion lifetimes, then one might take up devotional service. Right? Just inherently, because in other words, the Sukriti will just pile up that one day you kind of go, oh, this is what it means. Right? So that's the point, is that that's called the slow path. Right? So Krishna's not recommending that. He's recommending the quick path. Because unfortunately, in between those pious lives, if anything's done wrong, there's also lower planets, hellish planets, you know, the hells themselves, animal life. So you're talking about a long time. You know what I'm saying? Because one of those lifetimes is as Brahma. You know, so that's already one universe gone. Then if you're Prajapati, he also lives as long as Brahma. So that's another one gone. Right? Like that. Now if you're great sages, some of them basically live almost as long or quite long. You know, Markandeya is Chiranjeev. He lives as long as Brahma lives. You know, like that. So, you know, like Hanuman, Jambavan, Ramana's brother.
Vibhishana.
You know, these are pretty Chiranjeev. I guess,
I've been here for a while.
Yeah. I don't know if he's Chiranjeev, but because it also can be a position.
Something like 70 million
years. We're talking about 311 trillion. That's Chiranjeev. So in any case, you know, it's a long time. You know, Indra, that's 1/14th of a day of Brahma. So you're talking about 72 cycles of the Mahayuga. So 4,332,000 years times 72. You know, so we're not just talking about a billion lifetimes of a human. You know, so that'll be, you know, some of them also. You know, so that's the difficulty. You know, you may also look at it. It may be only talking about human. Because they're the ones that are actually making the endeavor. The other ones are just living that anyway. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like when you're on vacation, you're not endeavoring to make money. You know, so it's running out, not increasing. You know what I'm saying? So then that even stretches it out more. So it's like, so in that billion years, generally speaking, you would say one would, by the association of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, eventually figure it out. So that's what is so special about the preaching mission, is that without waiting for that 1 billionth year, 1 billionth lifetime of piety, you're coming up there and just letting them know that this is what's going on. They may appreciate it or not, but hey, it's worth a shot. Otherwise, see you in a billion lifetimes. You know? Does that make sense? Okay. Now the gradual development of bhakti, starting from its seed, form of shraddha, will be explained. Right? So now we get into that. As soon as the seed of shraddha is sown in the heart, immediately bhakti devi appears there. Bhakti at the stage of shraddha is very delicate, like a newborn baby girl. Right? Doesn't say newborn baby boy. Therefore, she should be carefully protected from all varieties of inauspiciousness, such as jnana, karma, yoga, attachment to material objects, to a baby girl, okay, dry renunciation, etc. If shraddha is not protected, she will not develop into bhakti, but will merely assume the form of an artist. Right? Because the point is it's a fertile ground. Right? Infertile ground. You know, pious ground that piety can develop. The ultimate piety is devotional service. So the same ground will grow both. Right? You know, that you see. You plant, you make the ground, not much is growing out of it. You plow it up nicely, put lots of fertilizer, develop it very nicely, plant all your nice plants. Now the weeds grow really well. You know, before they couldn't. You know, but now it's done so they grow very nicely. So both will grow. So if you don't attend to the weeds, then all you'll get is weeds. That's the danger of disease remains until Shraddha Devi becomes free from the influence of the anartas and transforms into nishta by being nurtured by the affectionate mother of the association of genuine devotees and taking the medicine of bhajan. Right, so nishta, then one can say, that you can say is then, it's
solid.
Yeah, solid, it's fixed. So that's why Prabhupada says nishta is the beginning of advanced devotional service. Right? So technically it's also known as pure devotional service. Not pure unalloyed. It's the lowest stage of pure devotional service. The second being bhava, and then the highest being prema. But it's still pure devotional service. That's why it's the preacher who carries. This is, we'll see later, should come up in Madhurya Kadambini. It's the preacher who carries that devotional potency that by association then one gains. So that's the point. So that's why the preacher is not to be offended.
In Sankirtan Maharaj, many times we see that when we don't have the potency from the Bhagavatam, people don't get interested in it.
Yeah.
When they see that you're connected, and then they are very interested and they take books.
Because there's something that means, let us just stretch an example, right? Now, let us say you walk into somebody's yard, right? And their dog is there. Right? Now, that dog may be friendly or may bark or attack. Based on what?
On what you display.
Yeah, your mood. So, animals can figure out the mood. Right? And just like babies, you know, small kids, they pick up your mood. You know, we're sitting there creating the environment and teaching things in the environment. That's not what they learn. They may learn that also. What they learn is your mood. That they pick up like that. We'll say, oh, they're not learning the skills, so they're not actually learning the mood. No, they learn the mood first. Right? You know, when they're 3 years old and they're talking and interacting, they already have your mood. You understand? So therefore, they can catch these things very easily. Right? So one would say, well, they're just karmis. What do they know? But if we say they're karmis, then technically, then they're... If they're not practicing, you know, the Vedic culture, they're animals. And animals have a sense for mood. You understand? So even from that, just from the animalistic point of view, they'll be able to detect a mood that's beyond something, that has some life to it, that has some meaning, some substance. Right? Does that make sense? You know, so that's right, because they're looking for substance. And even let's just take this a little further, not as the example that will adjust. Now, what is the materialist, the gross materialist, looking for?
Pleasure.
And they're looking for pleasure, yes. How is that pleasure gained?
Sex life.
But is it the form of the sex life that's generating the pleasure?
No.
What is generating?
The Lord's potency.
So actually they're looking for Krishna. So all any living entity is doing is looking for Krishna. Some know it, some don't. So therefore, if you are also looking and therefore have that mood, they'll perceive it because that's what they want. But they can't explain it. They don't know why, but they just see you have it. So they want it. You know, because they're used to seeing that and it's in some material object that they're going to get pleasure from. But they're seeing it in its pure state. You know, free from that, you know, that karma and jnana and all what they're used to doing. And so it's more interesting, intriguing, attractive. Does that make sense? So that's why it's important. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Yeah. So either way, just as the living entity looking for happiness of the world, as the jiva, so we're looking for Krishna, knowing what we're looking for. They're looking for Krishna, not knowing. And you're happy, and you're not doing what they're doing, and you're happy. So that means you have found what they're looking for. So how did you find it? You know? Or, from the other point, is that being animals, they still have a sense. They can check, they can see mood. You know what I'm saying? And so that's the... Does that make sense? You know. Yeah, okay. Okay, so that means having free from the influence of anartis. So that means anarta nivriti means anishta bhajana kriya had to have been performed. That means you're initiated, means you associated with devotees. That meant you had shraddha. So it means, so cultivating from there, when it comes to nishta, then it's solid.
That's why this is a platform where one can really start preaching.
Yeah, means, but yes, that means one will have great effect from that platform, but just as we are on a lower platform, or on the neophyte platform, studying what is pure devotional service, it doesn't mean that that aspect's not there, that undeveloped seed of bhava's not there. Right? So, therefore, the neophyte takes on the duties of the madhyama and preaches. Right? So because they're taking on those duties, it carries that potency. They may not carry as much potency as a madhyam, but they are performing those duties. That's why you can have a new bhakta, and he can make devotees, because he's carrying that potency, because he's taking on the duties of the madhyam. And the uttama takes on those duties also, but he has a greater volume of that understanding. So his ability to transform is greater. But still, the medium of it is the madhyam, the preacher. That's why it says to offend the preacher. It doesn't say to offend the neophyte, to offend any devotee. It says the preacher specifically. Because through the preacher comes the devotional potency. You offend them, where's your connection? Because it's only in connection with them that the seed is given. So if that's offended, then it's a problem. Does that make sense?
Don't see Krishna.
Don't see Krishna?
You don't see Krishna coming.
Yeah, especially when he has 10 arms and he takes everything away. Yeah. Okay. So he's mentioned them all in here. This is the point. No, he said Shraddha, influence of anartas, right? It should be protected, you know, like the Shraddha is not protected. Okay. Danger. Influence of anartas. Anarta Nivriti, Tesla of Anishta, nurtured by the affectionate mother, association of devotees, Sadhu Sangha, you know, taking the medicine of Bhajan, Bhajan Kriya. So very poet. This is the meaning of poet when it says the devotee is poet. He's taken this technical thing that we, you know, generally love to discuss so technically, and he's put it like this way, so poetic that we may not even catch that's what he said. But because of our attachment to Gyan, we'll say it in the other way because it, you know, gets a nice thing. But here, he's not attached to that, so he'll say it very poetically. Yes.
Is this tendency, is that the attachment to the flowery language?
That's his flowery language, yeah. But here, flowery language means we think that by detachment, then we'll be happy. Mm. Or by facility, we'll be happy. In other words, by piety, other than devotional, we'll be happy. That's the flowery words, is that they point those out. It'll elevate you to the highest platform, you know. So in karma, it has the highest platform. There is a terminal end to what you can get, you know, just like the termination of the path of Gyan is the Brahma Jyoti. So when they say the highest, they mean within that.
So it's attachment to form.
Yeah, it's attachment to form. But that form is not being seen in relationship to the Lord. If it's seen in relationship to the Lord, then it becomes uplifting. But when you see it's the Lord that's important, then then you engage the form in the Lord's service. That's pure devotional service. But if we see the form is, you know, in relation to Krishna, that's very good. That's very pious. That's proper.
That's mixed,
but it's dynamic mixed because you have knowledge. You're doing that and don't know, that's less. The devotee who doesn't know, and he does his job and all that, but you know that, and some of the money gets to Krishna and stuff like that. He's getting benefit, but he doesn't know. But if he understands the process, he gets more. So that's why knowledge is given such an importance. But jnana is not. So if somebody just gets into the knowledge and all that, but they're not doing something, then that's not important. The point is you have knowledge. So just if we go back to the process, sambandha abhideya and prayojana, it's development. Now if we have knowledge, what's the next step?
Abhideya.
Okay, and then prayojana. But in sambandha, what are the two stages?
To know the feeling, to be attracted.
Yeah, to be attracted. But you're attracted when you based on the knowledge. So when Shankarshan is understood, you know the field, so you know all they can get, then you're inspired. So then you're inspired that I can get this result that the field defines. Right? Shankarshan defines. And therefore, and if I use this process that Shankarshan defines, I can therefore get that result. So by studying, that's why we see in the introduction, it's saying that when you understand the spirit of Gita, right, the purpose, it's how you say the spirit, the purpose, the subject, and the process. It's only describing sambandha here, but all the four aspects of the Chaturvyuha seen as knowledge in Shankarshan. So Shankarshan includes the knowledge of all the other three.
That's what they expect.
Yeah. So then, being there, then one becomes, then it becomes dynamic. Then you bring in the element of the mind. That the mind wants this, so therefore rasa is there. So then you want it, so you need it, so you make the endeavor. So the experience is there, results are there. Does that make sense? Yes? No? Maybe? Kind of. Oh well, it'll come up again, don't worry. Yeah. Once she has reached the stage of Nishtha, no anarta whatsoever can easily harm her. Whatsoever can easily harm. It doesn't mean they can't. So also there's another aspect here underlying that's even more subtle. Is anarta nivriti. also can mean coming to the stage of bhava, because then the one's conditioned nature, which is the anarta, has been given up. Right? So you have anarta nivriti, meaning that point at which one goes from anishta bhakti as a neophyte and goes to the beginning stage of the madhyama, who's fixed. But it can also mean that stage where one's gone from conditioned nature, which is the neophyte and the madhyama, to the platform of the uttama as bhava. It can also mean that. It's important to understand that point, because here no anarta whatsoever can easily harm her. Says no whatsoever can easily harm. In other words, if one's progressive like that and one's careful, one's got, then no, nothing can bother.
So if you remain faithful to the knowledge,
and apply it and that, but then things are very steady. But it also come up when you're talking a raganuga. The raganuga, some will say, no, it insists it has to start at the nishta, meaning within the madhya. But it can also mean nishta, meaning being fixed in bhava. Yes?
And it's not that these anarthas don't come up, but they're coming up more like habit rather than anarthas.
Yes.
It's facing Krishna, not turning, seeing as an impediment.
Yes. Because initially it means your determination is Krishna and not that, so it's going very nicely. But before that, the anarta itself is something of value. After that, it's not of value, but it's a comfortable environment you prefer being in. You know, like Arjuna prefers being in the Kshatriya environment. You know, and then in that, you know, so that is attachments that will come up from conditioning, will come up through there. But his determination is not that. So that's why after explaining those first chapters, then Krishna is making the point that he's a madhyama. You know, he's situated as a preacher and stuff like that. That thing. But then later, then he explains what the uttama platform is. So we understanding that means we try for that now, and that's what progresses us through. Is that okay?
Well, the anarthas come, but we cannot arm our determination to serve Krishna.
It shouldn't, yeah. It says not very easily. Like that. So if one's fixed, one understands, one's like that, then there shouldn't be any problem. But that's why the association, performing bhajan in the association of devotees is the important element, because that will make it even stronger.
Also, within this, we can find the hidden meaning that on Nishta platform one can connect all these aspects of life?
Yes. Generally that means it's there. It works. So means yeah. Yes. Yes. But it's more attachment to the situation itself is comfortable rather than what you can get from the situation. You understand? The neophyte, the situation is important because of the result it gets. Like that. So, therefore, he's trying to go from sakam to nishkam. It's his result, giving it to Krishna, coming to the platform of sannyas, where the result is, he's only working for Krishna. But the point is it's the situation that's the conditioned nature, right? It means the body is the situation. The particular eyes, nose, ears, what kind of mind, what kind of intelligence, that's the situation. But the madhyama is comfortable in that situation that he knows it well and knows how to use it in Krishna's service. So, you know, that's, does that make sense? So it's still there, but it's not distracting. Right? So there's still some element of that. There can be that element of mixed if one's not careful. One can get too distracted by that. One always has to understand and keep it on that pure platform. Does that make sense? There are two types of jnana. Spiritual knowledge, which is directed towards attaining mukti, and Bhagavat Tattva jnana, which arises simultaneously along with bhakti in the heart of the jiva. The first type of jnana is directly opposed to devotional service, and it is essential to stay far away from it. Some people say that bhakti arises only after the cultivation of such spiritual knowledge, but this statement is completely erroneous, for bhakti actually dries up by the cultivation of such knowledge. Right? They're trying to say, because they're not discriminating that the process of elevation out of the material world is the same for the devotee as it is for the impersonalist. When Krishna says there's one path, it's the same path. You're walking on the same part of the path. Problem is, when you get to mukti, they stop walking. Is that what, yes?
So, can this Western Prajapati Gyan, is this in the first category?
Basically.
Because it says spiritual knowledge.
This is why sometimes we'll use the differential, there's spiritual knowledge, there's devotional knowledge. Devotional knowledge is automatically, spiritual means not material, right? So devotional knowledge is automatically not material, but it's not that spiritual knowledge is automatically devotional, right? That's the fallacy in logic. Where generally for us, when we talk, we mean spiritual means devotional. They're interchangeable words. But when you're getting technical, they are different. So therefore, there's material, spiritual, and devotional. Right? So the spiritual there includes the material element of still being want to be the controller and enjoyer. And the devotional includes spiritual in that it's not material. It's beyond material. That's why the spiritual element has natures of both. That's why it's hard to understand. So most of these discussions where we're dealing with that fine point, we're dealing with this, separating the devotional from spiritual from material, because we get mixed up. And sometimes if we're looking at it from emotion, material and spiritual. Like that. So the discrimination is lacking. So this process cultivates the intelligence so we can discriminate. Does that make sense? But it's not the knowledge itself that's important. This knowledge is defining how things are working in the spiritual. You know, I mean, how to get from the material to the spiritual to the devotional, right? But the devotional includes the spiritual. That means here it's saying, unless you deal with the spiritual, you won't get to the devotional. So unless you have the knowledge, you won't take up devotional service. But devotional service already includes jnana and vairag. So just by taking up that service, some knowledge is coming and that. So, but here we're cultivating the knowledge, but this Bhagavat-tattva jnana, not this jnana of liberation.
So because we fail to discriminate between jnana and Bhagavat-tattva jnana, that's why we have sometimes in our movement, you know, it's like dried up.
Yeah, you'll get that. They're not discriminating.
They're not able to bring anybody to devotional service, nor themselves.
Yeah.
And they but think that everybody should follow what
they're doing, yeah. Because they'll take jnana as higher than karma. But the point is there's some devotion there, otherwise why are they still around? Yeah. Like that. So but it's the jnana is creating an obstacle to move forward more than what they are. So they're probably quite steady, quite detached. You know, their sadhana is good, their knowledge is good, all this, but it's not progressing more because there's this idea is because of that, that's why they're advanced. No, it's because they've advanced, this has come. So they're just, all they have to do is switch that or evolve. You know, it's just like we're saying, the Griha Medhi, what we're defining in Bhagavatam is the Griha Medhi. Is what we would call a grihastha, but where they put the house as the center and Krishna is one of the rings outside that. You know, we'll generally take it, grihastha means a devotee, you know, grihastha, and a grihamedi means, you know, disgusting, wretched, you know, terrible, karmi, stinky, smelly, right? Right? But that's not what's being discussed in the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam's discussing someone following the Vedic culture, but Krishna's not the center. So that's Griha Medhi. But because Krishna's there, then they're devotees. But it'll be neophyte. So when Krishna's the center, now we're talking pure devotional service. So it doesn't matter where one's situated. So the grihastha then is a pure devotee. Is that? Okay. On the other hand, tattva-jnana, concerning the mutual relationship between the Ishvara, the jiva, and maya, which arises in the heart of the jiva through faithful cultivation of devotional activities, is helpful for his bhakti. It's helpful, it doesn't say it's essential. Because even if you just perform devotional service, without study, like that, knowledge and detachment will come. And so, therefore, it will be, then even if one can't study now, as one progresses, it will become easier. Because it's expected one will study. But the point is devotion develops the knowledge. Right? And so the knowledge is helpful in the execution of your devotional service, so you can tell the difference, what's material and what's not.
What about those devotees, Maharaj? We see sometimes they're quite serious, but their intellectual capacity sometimes can be very, very, very less.
It doesn't matter, as long as your intellectual capacity is engaged. That's all. Right? When you say body, mind, and words is fully engaged in Lord's service, it doesn't give a quantity. Right? So if all they know is Krishna's God, I'm his servant, so whatever I do should be for Krishna, and that's all they know of the philosophy, they'll go back to God. You know, because that is the essence, that's the essence. All other points are defining that. That's what he's saying here. Ishvara, Jiva, and Maya. Like, you know these three. Then that's all you know. So if you know technically know it, it just means, in other words, the technical understanding means one has the capacity to see that. So that means one also has the capacity to be doing that. Both, you know, in the positive to apply it and in the negative that one is doing. Does that make sense? The other person, they don't see much, but they don't notice anything mixed. So nothing just, it doesn't distract them. You know, so they may not be able to tell the difference between all these things. They like doing this service. That's all they, hey, you want to do this? No, I just like doing this. So they do. They're absorbed. You know what I'm saying? So the sophisticated person can understand more of these technical points of the philosophy. But because he's more sophisticated, he has more technical problems with his devotional service also. You understand? There's more subtleties of the mix than the other person's, because the other person won't see it. So it's not, that's not his worry. What you see is what you have to connect. Right? Just like we see in Narad Muni as the maidservant. He sang. You know, even as a child, I wasn't much interested in playing and this and that. I was just interested in understanding the Supreme Lord, right? And then Prabhupada in the purport said, you know, of course kids play and this and that. So it's just in his consciousness he wasn't going to play. But it doesn't mean that in how he deals and moves, is not playful. But in his consciousness, playing is, you know, not doing anything and, you know, going out and playing. You know, but, you know, when you're sitting there with all the adults and the kids going like this, he's not playing. You know, he's paying attention to what everyone's saying and that. But the parents say, stop playing. You understand? Does that make sense? So in other words, he only sees that because so he's fully absorbed. But now one can learn. In other words, they have the potential to learn more. So as one goes, there's every chance one will learn more. And even if one technically doesn't know more, the realization on what you do know will become very deep. And it would probably take a great scholar to be able to explain where it's from, what you're talking about. You know, like was the Jayananda wasn't known as a great scholar. But what he could speak, you understand? So that's the point, his realization very deep. Simple points, but he could explain those simple points and change people's lives. Right? Because of the depth of realization. So it's not volume, it's more as the depth.
And Prabhupada is naming, I was just reading an introduction on the nectar of devotion, Prabhupada is naming very dear disciple.
You know, who he actually, you know, was is probably beyond our understanding. So still a few more minutes. So it says helpful for bhakti, right? This knowledge is called aituka jnana, or knowledge which is devoid of ulterior motive, right? So therefore this Bhagavat tattva jnana is defined by that which is devoid of ulterior motive. right? If there's ulterior motive, then it's mixed with the other kind of jnana. Right? But it can be mixed. There can be some aspects that are pure, but some aspects that are not. You know what I'm saying? So maybe the knowledge itself is that, but you want to be recognized for it. So that's mixed. You know, or in some areas that it works really well, but some areas you just can't deal with properly. So there's a mix there. You know what I'm saying? Like devotional service, chanting the holy name, all that you deal with really well, but when it comes to like grihastha engaging himself in Krishna service, you know, these fine points, that he can't grasp. So that aspect will be mixed. That makes sense. Yes.
How mixture of attachment to jnana transforms this jnana into jnana, which is called is impersonal realization?
Because the knowledge means it's going to be devoid of relationship or rasa, practical relationship. So naturally, it just kind of goes that way. So knowledge has to be understanding relationship and how to apply that, then it becomes very useful. And as we see, because Krishna is a person and his energies are persons and they interact. Therefore, and so the Bhagavat Tattva Gyan that's being explained to us is that knowledge of which is devotional service, which the Lord and his energies are interacting. So that means even the most technical point in Vaishnava, you know, theology is also explaining rasa, interaction. Right? Or let's not say it also is. It is like that. We may just see the knowledge aspect of it. But that's what it's there. So that's where sometimes you... Yeah, does that make sense? Yeah, as we'll see when we get into the Bhagavatam study. Bhagavatam is the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. That means Vedanta Sutra is describing all the things that Bhagavatam is. But it's in a language meant for scholars who have a tendency towards jnana, you know, or impersonal realization, or like this. But, you know, we'll study it and see that it's just in a very succinct way describing all the points that the Bhagavatam is making, all the anuchanas, like that. Does that make sense? Sutta Goswami says in Srimad Bhagavatam, by rendering devotional service under the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, one immediately acquires, causes knowledge and detachment from the world. So that's the point, is it goes the other way. Because if he's made before, you can't know God through your intelligence. So that means the knowledge in devotional service, you're not getting using your intelligence. It's you've gotten it from the practice of devotional service is being by the Lord's grace. Like that. That's all. You know, and even if we want to be, you know, sticky on the point, there's even the karmis and jnanis, they only have that intelligence by looking for the Lord in that way and the Lord in that way reciprocating with them. So still, through their intelligence, they're not getting anything. It's still only coming by the Lord's grace. But leaving that aside, yes.
You say chit potency, does that encapsulate that idea?
Chit means, yes, but it means you also have your knowledge potency in the material world, which will be a reflection of that chit, but it's not the spiritual chit. Does that make sense? So your material jnana means knowledge of chitta chit ishwara without the actual understanding of spiritual potency. You know, you're looking at the material world or at God or at the living entity, but because you don't see the connection with the Lord, then you end up with all kinds of things. So suddenly you understand you're the soul, you're eternal, part of this and that. You know, the Maya bodies won't have a problem that we're 1/10,000 of the tip of a hair. You know, so it's, these things are not, these aren't the problem. The problem is it's not connected to Krishna. That's what makes it this mukti tattva jnana instead of Bhagavat tattva jnana. And even here we leave out tattva, technically, because tattva we define as Bhagavan. Yes?
Is it an infallible mechanism that bhakti gives a revelation by some being?
Yes. You have a problem with that.
Why?
Why not? Why shouldn't it? What's your problem with it? What do you find is the fault that Sundini giving it? You know, why not you find it in your, you know, Cheerios box? Yeah, when you pour it out, you know, pouring out, you know, and then, then you can chant Eureka and go running around.
One could just be perfectly engaged in bhakti and not get some mini revelation.
Perfectly engaged in bhakti. So how would you engage in bhakti unless you're in an environment? Are you going to engage in a void? Huh? There is that element.
Must be.
Yeah, okay. So what's the problem if that element is the one giving the revelation? It means we are very comfortable with that environment is what's giving us our happiness. So why not that's what's giving us our realization?
I'm asking why the revelation will come.
That's a different question. See, the first question, what it means, let's say, the second question is accepting that this is what Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, so he shouldn't be wrong, right? And so he said this is what's bhakti and how you get realization. So asking how exactly does that work? That's one question. You've accepted this, and then asking how it works. The other one is why it's like that. Why couldn't it be something else? You understand? One's a doubt. And then the other is just trying to further one's understanding. Right? The two different things. Does that make sense? So we're generally used to asking it by the doubt. So that's why it constantly will come up that removing the doubts and misgivings. Right? Doubt is, you know, like this, but you could work with it if it's that way. Misgiving is, even if you prove it logically, you still can't work with it. Because there's some emotional attachment there. It has a problem with your own identity and stuff like that. If you accept this, your identity change, all these different things. So you have a misgiving. So that's why anartha nivriti means getting rid of the doubts and misgivings. So the doubts are the easy ones. The misgivings, that's the tough ones. You know, like, why do I have to completely surrender? That's a misgiving. Is that okay? Yeah. The point is you're dealing, you have the environment, you have the activity, you have the result. So when the activity and result are combined, that means naturally, where does knowledge come from? Where is knowledge situated in this process?
In Sambandha.
Yeah. So that's where Sandini is. So knowledge is Sankarshan. That's why its reflection, its material world is ignorance. So even though they have knowledge, it's still ignorance. Knowledge not connected to Krishna is called ignorance. So even studying Vedanta Sutra not connected to the Lord is actually avidya. Like that. A bit shocking to the studiers of the Upanishads, but yes, it's avidya. That's the point, because the Vedic knowledge is aparavidya. It's knowledge of the world that you're connecting to the Lord. They'll say, no, it's Vedanta. But the Vedanta means that it is the connection of the Lord with this chit, achit, and ishwara, this combination. That's what knowledge is. That's Vedanta. But if you don't accept these three, right, the material world's illusion, so technically it doesn't exist. And the jiva being separated is an illusion that doesn't exist. So that all we have is Ishwara. But why would we call Ishwara if there isn't anything else? Yeah. Does that make sense? So therefore, even the concept of being Ishwara means that there has to be something superior and something junior. So that can't exist. So then what do they have? It's not actually Vedanta. They're taking the form of Vedanta and thinking that's Vedanta. But Vedanta is beyond the form. It includes the form, but it's beyond the form. Like sound includes the ears. And the thing that the objects that collide with one another. Right? The sound is produced by collision of you know, basically matter with other matter. Right? So the principle of sound includes those, but they still sound is beyond that. You know what I'm saying? Is that, yes. What's the way to get rid of
misgivings?
By engaging, by association of devotees, performing bhajan, having that faith that what is beyond is actually one's goal, and if possible, engage that area of misgiving in Krishna's service, and then it will become purified. That's always best. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So, end here. Today is Tuesday. Okay, so Thursday. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Janitai Gaurav Prema.